concurrent nine, ACC update. Having a good discussion at dinner last night about the rugby and the cricket and kind of the netball. I think we came to the conclusion at our table the netball was the sort of the litmus test. So Wayne Anderson, for those of you who don't know, Wayne, pricing actuary at the ACC, has been with the organisation 12 years and as pricing actuary has responsibility for levy rates, the recent VRR system, but also obviously working closely with both Treasury over there and the Ministry of what's called Business Innovation and Employment. So Wayne's going to give us the scheme update and has asked that the session be somewhat informal, so if people have got questions along the way, feel free to butt in. And so we've got 40 minutes.
Cool, yeah, so I'm quite used to being quite informal with these things. Any questions you do have, I'll try to answer them. I suppose I haven't got the disclaimer on there, but the views are my own and hopefully won't get me in trouble with my employer. There's a few ACC people here, so hopefully I don't go off target too much. Now, I realise that, you know, over here, not necessarily up to date with what ACC does and the intention there, so first few slides are kind of some background on the scheme. Our three main tenets that have been in place for over 40 years now is around injury prevention initially, stopping those injuries from happening, and if they do happen, then rehabilitation, getting them back to independence as much as possible, and then finally compensation, so weekly compensation for that. And it touches on all aspects, as I'll touch on in the next couple of slides. So we have five funds. Essentially, we've got a CTP, which is our motor vehicle account, and the employer's work account, so the work claims. But we also have an earner's claim. So if you're an employee or even self-employed and you injure yourself outside of work, then it's covered by the earner's account and funded through, for most people, through their PAY, their tax. So there's a levy there. We have a non-earner's account, which is funding all of those people who aren't employed. So if they have an accident and aren't employed, they still get the same benefits as everyone else. Everyone, once you have an accident, no fault, 24-hour New Zealand, everyone gets the same. Obviously, weekly compensation, if you're not earning anything, then there's nothing to base that on beforehand, and generally that means you won't get anything. There are exceptions to that. So if you're injured before age 18 or whilst you're in university up to a certain age, then you can get loss of potential earnings. So there is access for that. That's based on the minimum wage. And finally, we have the treatment injury account, and that is if there's failure to diagnose or complications, unexpected complications through medical treatment, then the medical, what used to be medical misadventure account, a treatment injury account, will cover you there. So that could be some of the extreme examples where it starts to get cloudy, but it's not as cloudy for ACC, luckily. You have some jurisdictional issues here. We don't have them as much in ACC, but you've got examples where we've had someone who had a headache at work, luckily not ACC work there, but someone had a headache, their colleague said, here, take this aspirin. Turned out they'd never had aspirin before, turned out they were highly allergic to it, and went into anaphylactic shock. Ambulance arrives, fails to give them adrenaline in a timely manner, so therefore it becomes a treatment injury, although to start with it's a work injury because it happened at work. Ultimately, they get the same care. This one did cause a bit more confusion because with the work account, and it's the only account you can do, you have the ability to opt out. So we have a self-insurance part of that. And so this employer happened to be self-insurance. So there was a bit of debate over, you know, who actually should pay for that in the end. Luckily, that doesn't affect the claimant. That's just all back around. And they get the same benefits regardless.
What, just before you go on, can I be the first to interrupt? And the, sure. On that first, so here, so in Australia, there's a there are moves towards what we're calling a National Injury Insurance Scheme, NIIS, which has kind of got the same philosophy as the ACC, no fault compensation and so forth in respect of injury. Here the kind of the design is at the level of the injury mechanism, if you like. So we've got motor treatment, medical workers, and then general. Your table is more about how things are funded, or it's a bit of a blend of funding and mechanism.
So it's the funding. I mean, we have five accounts. They are legislatively ring-fenced, so you can't use the funds from one to fund another. So every claim has to be allocated to an account. However, it doesn't matter what account you're allocated to for the entitlements that you'll get, the exception, obviously, in terms of weekly compensation. So if you go into the non-earner's account because you had an accident and you were a non-earner, therefore it's pretty hard to get weekly compensation, although somehow it still happens occasionally.
So it's the
funding mechanism, really. Yeah.
So the earners and non-earners fund everything except motor and work?
Yep. So in terms of where it's funded from, so the first test is, did it involve a moving motor vehicle on a public road? Yes. Okay. It's a motor vehicle account. Again, there's tiny little exceptions to that. Otherwise, were you working and did it happen? Were you employed and did it happen at work? Therefore, it's a work claim. Are you employed but it happened outside of work? Then it falls into the earner's account. If you're not working at all, not employed, or in between jobs, or child, elderly, university, whatever, then non-earner's account funds that. And then the last one, treatment injury account. So if it's the failure to diagnose or complications of medical treatment, then it falls into that one.
Yep, so there's no levy on medical practitioners or hospitals?
There's the ability through legislation, there always has been, to levy providers, and it's being explored again for probably the 10th time. But currently, it's actually funded through an earner's levy. So when you pay your earner's levy in New Zealand, you're also paying a little bit towards treatment injury, and it's partly funded through the non-earner's account. So it's basically it depends on the status of the person when they're injured. Whether they're an earner, then it's funded from the earner's portion for the treatment injury. If you're a non-earner, then it's funded through the non-earner's appropriation. And the non-earner's appropriation is a government appropriation, so there's levies for the other ones, and non-earners is vote ACC, so it's a lump sum from the government, so therefore tends to get more attention from them. So this kind of potentially helps describe as well, and isn't readable, but this is a fictional person, Miranda, and it's basically all the areas that she can could be exposed to risk, have an injury, and how ACC would help that. So in box one, she's at work, and therefore if she has an accident there, the work account covers. She could be playing sport in the weekend, injured, and therefore covered. Could be driving a car, or a car being driven could drive into her, and then covered by the motor vehicle account. Or an example we've got there is her grandfather, or it could be her child or younger brother, or someone if she's at university, for example, then non-earner's account, or she's unemployed. And then finally, if there's some complication with medical treatment. So it is comprehensive in the whole area, so any accident. So something that takes up the majority of my life is setting levies, or at least providing advice to the board to help them decide what levy rates that they want to consult on. And this is basically the flow of it. So around the beginning of the year, we start working out what the levy rates should be, where things are moving, and that all heads towards consultation. So that this year started 1st of October. So there's quite a long lag in there, and it's got to go through the board to make their decision. So consultation is a public consultation that we try to get as much feedback from levy payers as possible. This is for the levied accounts only, but not the non-earners. It's an open consultation, so the board actually was required legislatively, but is very keen to get feedback on any aspect of the scheme, and then we'll potentially make changes to what they are recommending. They'll make a recommendation to the minister. The minister will get advice from Treasury and from MB, Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, used to be DOL over there, and we'll decide on something and then make a recommendation to Cabinet, and Cabinet will decide on something. So all this work that goes on, ultimately the government chooses whatever number they want at the end of the day. And I often describe this, you know, the levies come in, depending on the account, either 1st of April or 1st of July, but we start the work usually in about January or something like that. So it's I often describe it as an 18-month annual process. So it never ends, and in fact you're finishing one as you're starting the other. But yes, it keeps him busy. I think some exciting stuff for ACC, officially ignoring the non-earners account, and that's because it never will be funded. 30th of June this year, all the levied accounts were fully funded, so first time in 40 years or 41 years, and reasonably healthy position for a lot of them. Now, the non-earners account is always going to be an exception. It's currently 48.8% funded, and the government's chosen prior to 1999, everything was funded on a pay-as-you-go basis, so therefore assets were zero, funding position was zero, and all the levied accounts moved to a fully funded position, and so we had to play catch-up with those, and we finally caught up. The government chose for the non-earners appropriation to keep the pre-2001, in that case, claims all as pay-as-you-go, so it's always going to be underfunded until, I suppose, 100 years after the 2001 point. All the people that could have claimed under there are no longer alive, and therefore the post-2001 will be fully funded. Despite that, they don't want to fund the risk margin either, which is their prerogative, and they are the only levy payer, and we're reasonably confident that the government will still be around to pay for it. So it's never been an issue, and it's not an issue in terms of funding the claims. But, yeah, we are now funded for the other accounts, and, in fact, on a scheme-wide view, which doesn't actually mean anything, but on a scheme-wide view, we've 101.3% funded.
So the liabilities in that calculation include risk margin, don't they?
Yes.
So these are the financial margin as well, or just risk?
Just risk, yep. So there is no prudential requirement for ACC, and that has been something that's keeping a number of people busy over the last couple of years as well, coming up with what is the point that we should be targeting, and I'll touch on that in a slide or two. Something that we're quite proud of at ACC, or maybe I'm proud of because I've been involved, we've taken a more proactive view with our levy consultation. So in the past it used to be, here's a whole lot of PDFs, read it, get back to us in a month, and probably wasn't as open as it could be. And we've learnt through, if anyone was at the vehicle risk rating presentation I did yesterday, we've learnt things that should have been obvious to us, like no one knows that they pay an ACC levy. So trying to actually talk to levy payers about what their levy should be when they don't even know what those levies are or what they're covering is pretty difficult. So we've gone to a much more gone to an online interface where it's people can actually put in comments, and those comments will appear there, so other people can see the feedback that others have. It's not quite a system where it's someone posts something and then someone replies to that, and they're all completely separate. But it has got the Facebook kind of thing where you can like it if you like their comment. What it's meant is that usually we get 200 or 300 submissions a year. Online, when it closed end of October, we had 1,253, I think it was. So we're actually starting to get out there a whole lot more. There has been one year that we had a lot more submissions than that, and that was the year that we recommended putting up motorcycle levies significantly. And the motorcycle community was well organised, put together a template for all the people out there, which made it easy to actually read the submissions. It was all exactly the same template, stop ripping us off, basically. But yeah, it's been a good way to interact, and one of the things that we're making sure is that this isn't just 1 month out of the year. We're going to use this to follow up, so we're actually going to go back to these people a bit more and say, well, here's the outcome of all the consultation, here's what you're concerned about, here's what we've taken on board, and here's what we're going to change or look at improving going forward, so we keep that communication going. Something that's happened recently after at least a couple of years of trying to refine again, so our funding policy, the level that of assets that we're trying to target against liabilities, has been an area of contention. So before I showed you, you have ACC board makes a recommendation, and then the minister gets advice from others, and at that point there was contention about, well, ACC thinks we should be funding here, Treasury thinks we might should be funding here, and then ultimately we'd probably get some levies that are completely out of line with what we're recommending, which means what's the point of consulting on levies when the government's going to choose something completely different. So it's now moved from, this is the last year that the board has been required to have a funding policy of their own, which was a legislative requirement, to the government having a funding policy. So now the government says, well, this is the level that you should be targeting, here's how quickly you should get back to that level. So the hope is that that will be a whole lot more transparent and stop some of these, the silly results that a number of levy payers have pulled out. You know, you're going to say this, but the government's going to choose something else, so what's the point of actually talking to you? So we'll see if that actually happens going forward. So we're now targeting a lower number, 105%, which means that we are above that target for the levied accounts as well. So it means that we need to reduce levies even more than we have in the past years. We've taken a longer funding horizon so we can smooth out any changes. So in the past it was 3 to 5 years. So this is what we've just consulted on. And the 13th, in a few days, the board will meet to discuss all of the submissions and decide what they're going to actually recommend to the minister. So what we've consulted on for the WIC account is dropping it from 90 cents per $100 of LIBOR earnings, so 0.9%, to 80 cents. And the earners account going from $1.26 to $1.21 per $100 of LIBOR earnings. And the average for the motor vehicle account dropping from 194 to 130. So reasonably significant reductions, especially for the motor vehicle account, and in particular for the motor vehicle account, because we've been getting to a position where we're fully funded, we've had to charge more than we need each year. The previous year was $330 was the average, so significant reductions there. And if we don't reduce the levies, then the solvency is just going to keep skyrocketing up, and eventually we're going to have to charge even less. Which will put people in an awkward position. So it'll be interesting to see what the government actually decides to do in the end. So this is the solvency path, the projected solvency path of the WIC account.
Excuse me. So with the non-earners levy,
yep.
Right, so that funds what we would call general accidents, general type, not work, not motor, not treatment, and it partially funds treatment. So partially funds both of those.
Yes. Yep.
And at $1.26 per $100 of income, that was that where we were, or $1.20 thereabouts.
$1.20. Yep.
So how much? What proportion of the cost does that fund?
Onto the treatment injury part of it. So of that $1.26, at the moment it's 14 cents funds the treatment injury. $1.21, we're recommending, I think it's 10 cents out of that funds.
And what proportion of the treatment injury does that 10 cents fund?
Oh, okay. Yep. It's probably about 40% overall. The treatment injury account, the nature of it, where the costs lie is in the non-earners portion of it, and particularly for babies injured during delivery. So, and that is covered by ACC. So if these are failure in terms of, well, not failure, it's no fault, if there's some complication and baby's deprived of oxygen, therefore potentially brain damaged, then that's covered by ACC and that'll be on potentially on the requiring our help and assistance for the next 80 years. So that there's about, it's about 10 to 15 of them, unfortunately, per year.
Mm-hmm.
They each cost over their lifetime somewhere between 30 and 40 million. On a discounted basis, it's about 6 or so million.
Mm-hmm.
And they make up a good chunk of it. And obviously, there's less of the weekly compensation that can be paid, so that kind of boosts the earners part. So you have in the other predominant users, unfortunately, of treatment injury counter, as you're getting into the older years and therefore requiring more medical intervention, then there's a potential for risks to happen. And mm-hmm. they may be higher income earners as well because you're people who are at the end of their working career.
Mm-hmm. And so that leaves $1.10 or thereabouts to fund the other
yep.
component. And
yep.
what proportion of those costs does $1.10?
All of it. Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So we are charging a little bit less than we need to because we're overfunded, but it's around about probably about $1.12 then that we'd need to collect.
Yeah, so the unfunded bit is the runoff from the old.
Well, the unfunded bit is only for the earners account and for the so in terms of the non-earners account.
Yeah.
It's a government appropriation, so it's different to the earners levy.
Yeah.
So the earners account is overfunded.
Yeah, okay.
We're aiming for 105% and we've got 131 at the moment. This is never going to be fully funded, and the earners portion of the treatment injury account is slightly overfunded at the moment, but the non-earners portion is funded in the same way, so part of it is always pay-as-you-go, and therefore it's never going to be funded. So the WIC account, we're above our target. We're slowly heading down by basically reducing the levy down to 80 cents, and then our new funding policy basically says to track with underlying claims inflation. So that it does mean that there's a one-off jump at the moment by introducing this funding policy. But again, there will always be a one-off jump if the results actually change or the projections change, which they tend to. So the prior year to this, we had $1.47, which I think was the height of the WIC account levies. Now, New Zealand has just introduced Health and Safety and Employment Act. There was a review, about 3 years ago now, basically saying that health and safety in workplace in New Zealand is atrocious. Let's do better as a society. And one of the objectives of the, or one of the calls from the report and the objectives that's been implemented or will be implemented, is a 25% reduction in serious injuries and fatalities by 2020. So we're kind of running out of time for that to happen, but that's one of the intentions, and that's not just on ACC. ACC has a part to play in that, but there's also been a new a break-off from the old Department of Labour, Ministry of Business, called WorkSafe New Zealand, so the regulator part of it. So they are, the stick, and we have part of the carrot to try and incentivise people to be better than the minimum regulations. But the minimum, the bar is getting higher for employers. They're also required to not just take into account employees, but to take into account contractors, which they've been able to kind of ignore, and they can look after themselves in the past. So there's a requirement to look after the contractors going forward. Basically there's a call to bring the bar up, and that's going to put going to require a bit of effort from a number of employers. And at the same time, we're trying to say, well, that's the minimum. We need to get them even higher. So how can we do that? And how can we do that jointly? And given they're just forming, it's causing a few issues to make sure who does what part of it. But we will get through that. Motor vehicle account, CTP. So I spoke a bit yesterday for maybe a couple of people who were here around some of the changes we're making for vehicle risk rating. As I've already said, you know, we're recommending a sizable reduction in the levy. Part of our levy is also is collected through registration, but it's also collected through petrol levy. So we, in our consultation, recommended a reduction in the petrol levy. It's likely that the board probably won't recommend to reduce the levy, and that's given some of the feedback that's come in through consultation. So people are actually quite keen to keep the petrol levy up and basically take it, reduce the registration even more. And the argument is, you know, people who drive more should pay more, so therefore keep the petrol levy up.
How much cross-subsidy is left, if any, to motorcycles?
It's about $25 per vehicle that goes to cross-subsidise motorcycles. So, yes.
So let me ask the question a different way. What loading would you have to add to the motorcycle levy to bring them to...
Yeah. So motorcyclists have complained for a number of years that they think they're being overcharged and getting a raw deal. Last year, when we reduced from 330 on average to 195, we reduced everything except the motorcycle levy, and we kept that flat, and that annoyed a few people. And we're recommending the same, or likely to recommend. Our consultation had that, and our rationale is that the amount that we're charging, which depends on the CC rating, is probably around 400 to 600, should be more like 1,200, 1,300 to 1,800. And we have last year tried to put more of that information out there, created some what I think are really good infographics to display that. I think I've got some of them somewhere. Basically, motorcycles on average we expect to cost about 114, 117 million for the New Year's cost alone. And they're paying $27 million. There has been, they have tried, arguments may not be the right word, putting forward theories, a lot of this is done to us by other cars and stuff like that. So we've looked into that, and of all motorcycle accidents, about 42% of them have no other vehicle involved. Now, of the remaining 58%, that doesn't mean that cars always cause the issue. But we know that there's at least 42%. Now, if they have the same average cost, it means that 42% of the 117 million or whatever it is still more than 27 million that they're paying. We've had a number of discussions, including with the minister and some of the bikers' rights or clubs, and trying to put this message across, and they're putting the message back as well. And it's starting to be a useful conversation. So there's discussions around can we take into account rider behaviour, which traditionally we haven't been able to. There might be it's something that I think we should explore, and whether we can actually introduce it easily and have any evidence to base it on will be difficult. And the biggest problem is going to be, yes, you can differentiate people more, but currently you're here, you can differentiate, they should be charged up here. So if you actually get it correct and differentiate, you've got to differentiate this much higher number, which they don't quite probably get at the moment. If we did reduce the petrol levy, there's a small reduction for them because they use petrol as well. I don't think it sells it to them. I showed before that the motor vehicle count is 115% funded, I think it is now. When we started all our work on the levy consultation, our forecast was for it to be 102% by June, so we started based on March. And our investments team, yet again, did way better than they usually do. Given this, we thought we'd get to 105 with the current rate, and we'd have to significantly reduce it. Given what we've got, we'll have to reduce levies even more next year if nothing else changes. So that's our levy path. It's prior to that, it was increasing, and part of that was basically Treasury didn't like the fact that we didn't want us to include future increases in medical costs and serious injury care. So they didn't believe, and still don't seem to believe, in superimposed inflation. despite the fact that it always happens, and therefore wouldn't allow us to project it in the future. And then finally we won that argument and said, well, actually the liability is not here, it's up here, therefore to fund that we've got to have the levy quite significantly higher. But I don't think it's ever been as low as a 130. As I said, for vehicles, we have in the past had 15 classes, and that's broken down between petrol and non-petrol. So depending on whether you're paying a petrol levy, if you are, then your registration is lower based on the average usage or expected average usage of petrol. But it's broken down with things like motorcycles and then CC ratings. There's ambulances, which are exempt. There's trucks, which are broken down into smaller goods and service vehicles and larger ones. And then within the larger trucks, we've now introduced Fleet Saver. So anyone who has a fleet of, I think it's at least 5 vehicles, and passes a number of audit requirements can get a discount on their registration. So it's trying to incentivise better safety there. No one can read that, but that's all the, if anyone's interested, that's the different classes that we've got and the levies. When I put this in here, we probably hadn't had the feedback we'd got yet, but in terms of, given that we can collect from petrol and we can collect from registration, there is no right number, as far as I'm aware, of how much should be collected from each source. And you can go to the extreme and say, well, collect everything through petrol, therefore people who drive more will pay more. But that doesn't take account of fuel efficiency, and motorcycles in particular would therefore pay a whole lot less than a car, even for the same distance. So charging through class, we can differentiate by that. So it's the board consulted on pretty much doing it 50-50. It probably looked like it'll be a bit more through the petrol levy. Already talked about a bit about the motorcycle. So the relativity is for 600cc plus 1929% of the average. So if the average is 130, then 130 times almost 20 in theory is what they should be paying, and we're charging them $600 or so, which they think is a rip-off. In fact, we welcome this debate, and as long it's an opportunity to have the conversations about the right things, ultimately we want to do the same thing that they want to do and stop their people from dying. So anything that promotes a conversation ultimately should be a good thing. I think we're almost there. Vehicle risk rating has been the problem child for this year. Talked about it yesterday in a presentation, and basically we've got these classes. Light passenger vehicles, cars, make up 85% of the fleet, and we're charged a single rate, and the board rightly asked, that doesn't quite make sense, can we differentiate that more? And what we have used is some analysis from Monash University to break that down, and so we've ended up with regulations basically that say this make, this model, and this year range goes into one of 4 bands, so we've differentiated it there. And overall, there's probably a high 90% success in that. One of the issues that we've got is that the vehicle fleet, which is not, the information is not owned by ACC, has a number of issues in there. So we've got something like just under 3 million light passenger vehicles. And in terms of combinations of descriptions of makes and models, including spelling mistakes, we've got 86 or 87,000 combinations. So we've spent months, if not at least a year, fixing up that data, although we can't actually touch their data. So we take their data, feed it through some translations, spit out something, and we always knew that there were going to be problems in that. We introduced it at the same time that the average rate was going down, so therefore no one was going to pay more than the previous year. And we kidded ourselves in thinking, everyone should be happy. It turned out that they weren't all happy. And it turned out that there was, given all these rules that we've got to try and fix it up, there was a rule that made sense on its own account and another rule that made sense on its own account, except the second rule under part of the first rule for some cases. And so that caused a bit of issue. And we've got our local consumer advocates TV program, Fair Go, that helped point that out to us. And you know, we did the right thing and worked furious hours and even got Finity involved over a weekend to check some stuff and you know, put it right. And there's going to be ongoing issues with that, and it's I think it was in the other presentation and the person who helped put it together, I thought summarised it pretty well. You know, when you're differentiating people, there's always going to be winners and losers with a new system, but try explaining that to the losers. And you know, everyone who complained tended to be, well, I'm paying the highest levy rate, I think I should be here. It never tended to go the other way, unsurprisingly. I can go into some of the detail of this if people are interested, or we can do it offline, but it's basically how we came up with the vehicle risk rating, and the other presentation I've got is a bit more of the detail. Now, for the first time in forever, we have broken the consultation down into two parts because of how complicated VRR is. So we've done the first consultation, which is our usual one, and part of that's been the principles around vehicle risk rating to fix it up and say, well, this is how we're going to start from a principled approach. Get it right. We've actually created a whole database of makes and models that we're getting the public, manufacturers, vehicle experts, anyone we can find, to help make sure that's as accurate as possible. Once we've got all that information, we're going to go out again in December and give the detail. Final two slides. So the earnings account. We projected to be 125. I think it's 131 now. Is it June? And we'll slowly return back to, over many years, to the funding position. It's a 10-year funding horizon, so that means you never actually don't actually get there in 10 years. You're going to get there asymptotically, and I can explain that to anyone that further, but that has raised a few questions. Our projected levy rates, which I think are pretty good. The bit I don't have in here is kind of what is happening in terms of other things for ACC. So we've got a transformational program. I'd say it's bigger than the normal transformational change program. It's shaping our future is looking at, you know, not just the next couple of years, it's where do we want to position ourselves in the future. And it's been acknowledged as this isn't a 5 or 10 year even program, because in 5 years' time, the future that we want might slightly change. So there's not going to be one point where everything changes. There's going to be lots of little bits of change. Part of that is included actual cultural change within ACC. So there's a big investment in basically doing the right thing, the right time for the right reasons. And we've also, looking at all aspects of the scheme. So if we need legislation change, which has always been a barrier and stopped us in the past, let's actually push for that. We've got a minister now who's quite keen to move some of those things forward. The last thing I'll touch on, which is obviously interesting to me, is just the experience that is happening now. So we've gone from a point where levies are coming down significantly, our funding position's really above the target, investments have been doing wonderfully, but we're now starting to see an increase in claim numbers and durations. And so will that continue? It seems to be stabilising a bit at the moment, but stabilising at a high level. What is driving those? We don't necessarily completely know. And one of our new tenants or the cultural changes, customer centricity, as a number of schemes are doing, so putting the customer at the centre, is that actually driving the right behaviour? We're still putting that in place, and there will be some problems and as well as some huge successes hopefully from that. So it's kind of watch this space, and we'll definitely be watching it ourselves to see how that unfolds and putting our two cents in along the way. So thank you. Any questions?
Well, please join with me in thanking Wayne. Very interesting presentation. We look forward to the next update to see what has happened to those claim number trajectories here. So thanks very much.
Thanks.